On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Josh Bass and Marcus Barrahall recap the two preseason games between the Nets and Lakers in China. We talk about everything from Torian Prince's great performance to Caris LeVert rebounding in the second game. Plus, we give our thoughts on preseason basketball as a whole. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I am your host, Josh Bass, a lifelong fan of the Brooklyn Nets, and taking you on this journey as we get ready for the start of the 2019-2020 season, and really the next 20 years of this Nets franchise. I think when we're in our early 40s, myself and Marcus Barrahall we'll still be doing this. Marcus, isn't that right?
That's the dream, Josh. If we can carry this podcast forward into, what would that be, like the late 2030s? That's the dream for me.
Yeah, no, it would be great, you know? And then we're like, we have kids, and then our kids are friends, but they're also like podcasting on their own about like kid stuff. They're doing like a Ryan's Toy Review type deal. I'm really excited for this. Let's start getting this in the works.
Yeah, for sure. We should probably just plan out some episodes for our future children, just to get ahead of things.
Yeah, and then Sarah will produce. Right?
We'll bring Gavin in.
Yeah. I don't know. I've been friends with Gavin 20 years and a lot's gone wrong. But anyway, you guys don't come to this podcast to hear about what our future plans will be. You come to hear my Joker reviews. I saw the movie last night with some friends, and I liked it. You know, I didn't know what to really expect going in. I thought I would like it, and I knew that Joaquin Phoenix would give kind of a riveting and disturbing performance, and that was definitely the case, but I wasn't expecting so many incredible cameos, Marcus.
Oh, who was in it?
Okay, so two Atlanta alums. Zazie Beetz was kind of was one of the leads, not one of the leads, one of the main supporting people. And then Paperboy was in it.
Oh, wow. Brian Tyree Henry.
Yeah, Paperboy by Paperboy. How great is that? That Paperboy.
That's a good combo, too.
Yeah, they didn't have any scenes together, unfortunately.
I wish they could have like done something together and tied in some kind of Atlanta reference.
They're like, oh, yeah, I just moved here from Atlanta. Like, oh, yeah. And then also Warren from Billions, which I was very excited to see.
Oh, wow. Very varied.
I know, yeah. And then also the comedian Gary Goldman, who I like also. He did like, they took one of his sets directly from like what he's performed at Comedy Cellar and just plopped that in the movie, which was good.
Wow. You liked the movie overall? Joaquin Phoenix was good?
Yeah, overall good. I'd give it probably a B+ or maybe a B, right on the border there, but definitely enjoyable and highly recommend that people go out and see it.
Not as good as Good Boys, though, right?
I mean, nothing's as good as Good Boys. But right now, the favorites for kind of the Academy Awards would be Joaquin Phoenix and Thor from Good Boys. Those are really the top two.
It's a tight race.
It is. I mean, two very good performances, different in their own right, but very unique and have a special place in my heart.
For sure, and I'm sure they'll influence you for years to come.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Marcus, how have you been doing? Did you get to watch any of these preseason games in China? Obviously, a lot of drama that was going on, and some it took a turn into the political sphere as well for these games. But happy that they were able to play two games of basketball, and at least the basketball part didn't have much controversy, and none of the Nets or Lakers players were really pulled in, which made them unsafe or anything like that. It went pretty smoothly considering where it could have gone.
Yeah, for sure. We talked about that a little bit on the last podcast, just like leading up to those two games, where it seemed like things were sort of heading towards the games not being played. Like all the media availability was canceled. All of the like off the court activities that had been planned were canceled. But then the games wound up happening. They didn't have any like sponsorship logos on the court, which was interesting. And I know like billboards were taken down. So it was kind of like a weird atmosphere from that perspective. But then at the same time, like, by the end of game one, when it's like a one possession game in the final minute, like you're just watching two NBA teams play basketball, and the fans were super into it. So I think overall it was a success. At least for the Nets, it was a success in terms of they won both games, and they just kind of got everybody reps, everyone except for Kyrie, I guess.
Yeah, he was the only one. You know, he's been taking a beating, but happy the fans got to see some really good NBA action, some top players, because with everything going on, you know, they're the ones that really shouldn't be penalized for this. So glad to see that they were able to at least get some entertaining basketball. You know, there was a lot of Caruso, a lot of Jana Musa, but they definitely did get to see some star players besides Kyrie Irving, who got hurt in the first minute of that first China game, re-injured his face. So he's out for the rest of the preseason. Does not look like it's going to be anything that will keep him out into the regular season. So that's good. But, you know, they're just trying to take precaution. But I'm very excited to see Mass Kyrie once he's finally back in full force.
Yeah, we were both, I think, so looking forward to seeing Kyrie in a Nets jersey after he sat out the game against Ceci Franca previously. But it lasted for, like you said, literally 1 minute before Rajon Rondo ran into him. And then Caris LeVert also went out in that first game. So it seemed like a nightmarish start for the Nets, but with the news that Kyrie's injury isn't super serious, and with Caris obviously coming back for the second game, his isn't that bad either. So things could have been a lot worse, but yeah, it was kind of a bummer to see that like right away in the game.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. I'm happy that Caris got to come back at least and have a really nice game in game two, because especially for someone like him, he needs as many reps as he can have, given that he's just been so injured throughout his college career and then last season, and also his first season in the NBA also, not being able to play a ton. So, you know, he just needs a ton of reps, and happy to see it. And also it gave a lot of opportunity for our guy Spencer Dinwiddie. Torian Prince was raining threes and really has been the whole preseason. And Jana Musa went 16 points, 6 of 10 from the field, was just nailing some deep threes. You know, he's a guy with no conscience. I haven't been super impressed by whenever I've seen him play in G League and Summer League. I just don't think that he really has the athleticism to get it done on a nightly basis in the NBA, but he's proving me wrong. You know, he definitely has the skill set from a ball handler standpoint where he can have some contribution for this team, even though he might be a bit of a liability on the defensive end. So nice to see Musa getting some run. And is there any chance, Marcus, that you think he could play his way into the rotation to start the year?
I don't think to start the year, but I think you could definitely see him getting in maybe as the year goes on, like kind of like what happened with Kurucs last year, where at the start of the season, like it seemed like he would maybe like be on the roster at certain points, but then by January and into February, he was like a key part of the rotation. Not to say that I think that that's going to happen with Musa, but I think that that's the more likely path for him. His game was kind of reminding me a little bit of Stauskas, another former net great, just where he like Sauce Castillo. Yeah, he has like the ability to catch fire, and he clearly like is a great outside shooter when he's locked in. But he like offers like more athleticism than you'd expect, more off the dribble stuff like you mentioned than you would expect. But at the same time, like defensively, he does need to improve. He does need to, I think, work on his court awareness a lot. But yeah, I could see him eventually being a part, like getting some minutes on this team for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's another guy that, and I always talk about this, guys that have good vision but might not necessarily make the most accurate pass. And I'd rather have someone like a Spencer Dinwiddie, who I don't think ever makes a spectacular pass, but can get the ball to guys most of the time where they need to and put them in a position to succeed. So even though they're not adding a ton of value at the top end with being able to make those highlight level passes where they're passing guys into a position to score, they're at least not taking away from it and keeping the ball moving.
Right. It's more about like function as opposed to like the flair of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, absolutely. And yeah, it was good to see the get to play the Lakers, I think, because you're playing a team that has a lot of size, at least with JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard, even though both those guys came off the bench in the second game, but still AD, LeBron, these guys are huge. They're playing Kostas Antetokounmpo, Devontae Kaycock. So they're a team, it's not like you're going overseas and you're playing the Hornets, where it's basically the equivalent of playing Ceci Franca, but they don't even have Hetschheimer. You're actually playing a team with skill and athleticism and size. And given where the Nets are at right now, where, you know, Rhodey Kurtz is able to play in these preseason games, but they don't have a ton of size at the four. Torian Prince only measured in at 6'6", and he's going to be their primary option to start the year. it's good to see them get some reps against a team that could theoretically, at least from a matchup standpoint, give them some problems.
Yeah, Taurean Prince, like you mentioned, was playing the four. He was guarding Anthony Davis at times. And, I mean, I know it was, like, limited minutes and it's the preseason, but Davis, like, didn't dominate by any means. He got to the free throw line a lot, but, I mean, he wasn't super efficient from the field, so I think credit to Prince for that. And then another guy who I think can defend above his size that I mentioned on the last podcast is David Nwaba, who I think we've both been impressed with in this preseason. More so in that Franca game, he was just, like, playing way above his size, and I think that's kind of what the Nets have to do. We saw that a lot in the playoff series last year against the Sixers, where Embiid was just, like, way too big for anyone on the team, and so guys like Rondé were playing the five, Joe Harris was, like, getting key rebounds on the defensive end, and it's just going to take, I think, more effort on that end from everyone, like, regardless of position. And I think that if the team can buy into that and really focus on that, they have guys like Kyrie Irving, Spencer Dinwiddie, Caris LeVert, who can carry them more so on the offensive end.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that's the only reason why I think Jared Allen's a much better player than DeAndre Jordan, but I think DeAndre Jordan might make more sense as a pairing with Taurean Prince, because with Prince and Harris on the wings, you're undersized and Harris isn't the most athletic guy. You know, Kyrie is really not going to get in there and scrap for rebounds as much. He just doesn't have the frame to do so. So you really need a five that can be a huge anchor to rebounding the ball and closing out that possession. And that's DeAndre Jordan more than it is Jared Allen. You know, Allen has a lot of skills, but being an excellent defensive rebound isn't one of them. He can get pushed around a lot. He's been working on his body, but still not the strongest center out there. And DeAndre, even though he isn't what he was at his prime, he's still built like a tank and is an excellent defensive rebounder. I think he could be a really nice boon there. So even though he's replacing a guy in Ed Davis, who was also a great defensive rebounder, Ed Davis could get pushed around a little bit also because he didn't have that frame. He more so relied on being an expert when it came to knowing angles and anticipation. So I think DeAndre Jordan might be a better fit there with Taurean Prince, and then Jared Allen could feast against kind of backup centers who aren't as good pick-and-roll defenders when he's in there with Spencer Dinwiddie, a guy who's going to create a lot of attention away from him.
Yeah, it's interesting because I was listening to one of the Ringer podcasts, and Kevin O'Connor was saying that he is kind of expecting DeAndre Jordan to be the starter for the Nets once the season starts at the center position. And I think you and I both agree that we kind of like Jared Allen more, and obviously long-term you like him more just because of his age, but I tend to agree. I was, like, not expecting to think this, but after the first preseason game and then after these next two as well, it's just, I feel like DeAndre Jordan brings, like, a stabilizing presence, and like you said, he's just, I don't know, I just kind of trust him more, and it might just be because we've seen Jared Allen, like, either fumble the ball in the post, like in, I think it was in game four of the playoff series where he had like an opportunity down the stretch and he kind of lost the ball. Either like that stuff on the offensive end or on the defensive end, like you mentioned, getting pushed around by bigger guys, and the Nets, like the last year and a half to 2 years, always kind of being susceptible to that Miles Turner, Nikola Vucevic type of player who just is like kind of like really thick and built, and Enes Kanter is another example. So it might just be like being scarred from that, but I tend to agree that I almost want DeAndre Jordan to start right now.
Yeah, and it's not like an indictment against Jared Allen because he's still only 21 years old. You'd expect a guy like DeAndre who's been in the league for a really long time. You know, what is he? He's been in the league, what, 10 seasons? This might be his 12th season actually in the league. So he's an experienced veteran. He's not going to make those same kind of young player blunders. And I think DeAndre Jordan is someone with a pretty good basketball IQ. So I agree that he does have that trust, even though he might not have that ceiling that he once did. And Jared Allen definitely has a higher ceiling. And who knows? This is still very preliminary. It could play itself out further on in preseason and also once we get into the season. But, you know, regardless, they're still going to have a pretty even minutes distribution.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually, because I don't expect either of them to play more than, like, 30 minutes in a game, which would still leave, like, about 20 for the other guy. So I think it probably will depend on the matchup, and I don't think it's going to be, like, one guy starts 82 games or anything like that. So I do think it'll be fluid. It's just, like, right now I do feel more confident in DeAndre.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Marcus, what do you think about preseason basketball as a whole? Because for me, at least, I think I'm almost enjoying watching other teams play more than the Nets, because with the Nets, I have to just invest so much emotional energy and capital into it. Regardless that it's a preseason game, I'm still living and dying with every possession. So it's almost stressing me out because I'm still spending a lot of energy on this, but the games don't matter. And it's like almost, I think, good for my health if I don't watch these games.
Yeah, I kind of get what you're saying. That especially the first game was like very nerve-wracking down the stretch with like the turnovers and like Theo Pinson missing that free throw. But yeah, I mean, I enjoy preseason. I don't know why, but I feel like a lot of people take it more seriously than summer league, which I guess makes sense because there's like LeBron is like playing and like all the big stars are actually playing, as opposed to summer league where, yeah, you'll see guys like Zion who are going to be big stars, but they're still like kind of working their way there. But other than that, it's just like a lot of guys who won't be in the league. Like at least here you're seeing the guys who will be on the court. But at the same time, I don't know, it's hard to take it super seriously. I mean, I know a lot of coaches are kind of holding stuff back. They're not going to show everything. There are certain guys like Marcus Morris. I don't know if you saw just like slamming the ball against Justin Anderson's head. So some people clearly take it very seriously.
Marcus Morris has no chill.
Yeah, I don't know why he did that, but, you know, it's the Knicks. They're very cool.
Yeah. The Morris brothers in general and Gavin have a great history, so I'm very excited that at least Marcus is reunited with them.
That's a good point, actually, from the three of them, all former Phoenix Suns associates, I'll say.
Were they colleagues back then?
I don't know. I mean, Gavin was covering the Suns, but I wouldn't say they were colleagues.
Peers? Friends? Definitely yeah. Friends.
Definitely friends, for sure.
Yeah, well, Reggie Bullock and Gavin are friends.
That I actually think is, like, kind of true.
Yeah, that's, like, Reggie Bullock would recognize Gavin, which I think is good. But, yeah, no, I did like the 7:30 start, though. That was great. Like, being able, as I'm getting ready, I'm like, oh, the game started, and following and putting the TV on. That was, I think, probably the highlight of the whole experience thus far.
Yeah, I actually agree because, like, for my work schedule, I usually leave for work at, like, 10:30. So the games were wrapping up like right as I was about to head out the door. It timed out so well. I would not be opposed to more games like in that time zone. I know a lot of people are worried about the Nets like facing jet lag and whatnot when they come back, but I don't know. They have like a good amount of time. The season doesn't start for another week and a half, so they should have time to adjust. It's the same thing with like when the NFL plays games in London and they start at like 9:30 over here. It's like I love just like waking up and having something right away.
Yeah, I completely agree. And yeah, I mean, I think with like they only play one more preseason game. They play Friday. They host Toronto. So it's like they have a really good amount of time in place. But that's the type of thing where if they don't get off to the start that people want them to, that's the first place that blame will go, just because people are looking for something natural and easy. And that's going to China a couple weeks before you're getting ready to kick off the season.
Yeah, for sure. Do you think that's actually, like, kind of a good thing? I'm thinking about that right now, where, like, maybe, like, guys aren't quite clicking right at the start of the year. Do you think it's good to just have an excuse that's, like, not on anyone from the team? Like, maybe Kyrie is struggling the first few games, and he seems, like, a little distant, to just be able to say, like, oh, I'm still adjusting to the jet lag and, like, buy yourself some time? Is that crazy?
Yeah. I mean, I think, like, it's like, a no-win situation for him, because if he's playing poorly, then people get on for playing poorly. But if he blames the jet lag, then people will just say, hey, suck it up. Like, you're making $30 million a year.
Yeah, that's probably true. I mean, the numbers have shown that, like, the teams that go over to China in the preseason, they, like, almost always start off slow. I was, like, I don't remember where I saw it, but it was maybe in the New York Post, where the teams that, like, go to China in their first 10 games are usually, like, on like a 42 win pace or something like that. And then when they come back, it's like a 48 win pace. So if the Nets are the team that I think we both think they are, that could really end up swinging them, because they're going to be in that range of like 45 to 48 wins probably. So a couple losses early in the season because of this could knock them down in the standings by the end.
Yeah, no, it could. And I think it's really going to be tight between kind of those 3-6 seeds. With Toronto in the mix, Boston, Indiana. So, and Orlando could get in there also. So
yeah, Miami too, if they make a trade.
I'm not as sold as Miami as a lot of people are. But what I am sold on is Manscaped. Manscaped is the number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code LOCKEDON at manscaped.com. Marcus, did you hear about this this trade? Not even a rumor, because the players involved went to the exact same teams that they would have in this trade. But it was reported by Bleacher Report today that the Celtics and Nets had talked a potential of a three-way trade, where obviously the Nets would have gotten Kyrie, Celtics would have gotten Kemba, and Charlotte would have still gotten Rozier. But what would have happened is that the Celtics wouldn't have had to renounce Al Horford, and they would have had a much better opportunity probably of being able to bring him back. It seemed like his heart ended up being pretty set on leaving them and going to Philly. But if the Celtics had Horford, and they wouldn't have had Enes Kanter, obviously, but I think if he was on the team, and who knows, the chemistry, everyone's saying it's going to be better, they actually could have been a pretty dangerous team. They could have been probably a contender for winning the Eastern Conference, especially if you take a look at Philly's team without Horford, and then Milwaukee. I think they're going to be really good, but, you know, maybe some question marks there, since they did lose a really solid playmaker for them in Brogdon, and then a guy in Mirotić who was a nice shot maker.
Yeah, for sure. I thought this was interesting, but I didn't really see how it would make sense from Brooklyn's perspective, since, like, they, at the end of the day, got the same result that they would have gotten if they had done this trade, and all that it would have accomplished would have been helping the Celtics, it seems like. And so, since Kyrie was, like, unrestricted, whereas, like, in the sign-and-trade with the Warriors with Kevin Durant and D'Angelo Russell, like, D'Lo was a restricted free agent, so the Nets had his rights, so it, like, kind of made sense from that perspective. But, like, for the Celtics with Kyrie, like, if he wanted to leave, he could just go, which he did. So I felt like they had no leverage, and that kind of played into there not being a trade in the end.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Even if, like, regardless with any trade rumor out there, even if there's no functionality to it and there's, like, no reason that teams would do it, and end results pretty similar to what ends up happening, people just love talking about trades. It gets people excited. I mean, the amount of buzz that goes on right before the trade deadline, and even though we're disappointed 80% of the time with the eventual activity, it just gets people fired up.
Yeah, no, for sure. And, like, the more transactions, the more moving parts, I think, I don't know, I partially attribute this to, like, NBA 2K and the rise of, like, people playing as a GM in those games and kind of, like, making all those decisions that, like, back in the day no one really had to think about, but, like, seeing them all laid out in front of you, and, like, maybe this is just me, but, like, building a team in those games kind of makes you want to role play as, like, a GM for an actual NBA team, which then makes you more interested in these, like, marginal moves and these, like, trading multiple second round picks, all this, like, hinky Daryl Morey type stuff. I don't know. Maybe I feel like that's kind of the origin of all of this.
Yeah, it's like, I'm going to trade Jody Meeks for 7 second round picks and then flip those for, like, Brook Lopez.
Right.
Great. No, I agree. I love playing GM. People love role play, Marcus. I think that's really what we've learned over our last couple of years doing the podcast.
I love playing a role with you, Josh.
I know. We're both role players in the grand scheme of things, while David Locke and John Corrales run a pick and roll, and the rest of the Lockdown hosts are just spacing the floor for them.
Gavin's a classic, like, bench chemistry guy.
Yeah, Gavin's our chemist. Gavin's our Anthony Tolliver.
Like Kent Bazemore, yeah.
Yeah, it's great. It is really exciting stuff. I'm so jazzed up for the regular season start. Unfortunately, did you hear about this, that I have a work trip in Florida from the Saturday that the season starts to the Tuesday? So I think I missed two Nets games in that time, so I'll have to catch up whenever I have a spare moment watching the recordings on my YouTube TV.
Oh, wow. You're missing right at the beginning. This is like last year where you missed the last game of the season to see what play did you see?
What play? Oh, was that 2 years ago? Or no, that was last year.
Yeah, that was this past season.
What did I see? Oh, I saw To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah, that's right.
That was good. But I was, like, checking it furiously. But no, we'd already clinched that.
Yeah, it worked out beautifully where the Nets clinched, like, the second to last game. So that one was fine.
I had an agreement with my dad in place where if we hadn't clinched, I think it was against Indiana that we played. Because remember, we beat Milwaukee and Indiana back-to-back.
Yeah.
We were with each other when they beat Indiana. If they hadn't beaten Indiana and there was still some doubt on whether that playoff berth would have been locked up and they needed to win against Miami, I had my dad on standby to take my place, and he would have gone to play, and then I would have watched the game.
Wow, that's crazy, because he's a big Nets fan too.
I know, but he was doing me a solid.
Respect to Barry.
mad respect to Barry. Yeah, I mean, starting the season against Minnesota, so I'll only miss the Memphis game, but I do want to see obviously John Morant and Jaren Jackson. And tickets are only $6, Marcus. Do we need to take a flight to Memphis, kick it with Chris Vernon, and take the Nets in? Hopefully they would improve to 3-0 in the season.
Yeah, that would be great. I would love to get down to Memphis. Never been. Heard good things, though.
Yeah, do some walking in Memphis. Yeah, we'll talk offline on if those plans can be in the works. Another road trip for your boys. But we will be back in your ears later this week. Of course, you can subscribe to the podcast, rate us, review us, find us wherever you get your podcasts, whether that's Spotify, Himalaya, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher. We will be there. Follow us on Twitter. I am at JMBass_. My man Marcus is at Marcus Barahal. And of course, the podcast is at Locked On Nets. Until next time, be well and see you guys then.
Bye.